is Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. Tomorrow, coming up on Law and Gospel, Thanksgiving. It's Law and Gospel's Thanksgiving special. Very special guest, Pastor Peter Kurowski, author of the Everlasting Angels series. We'll talk about how do you celebrate Thanksgiving in a religious sense in a secular country? Or are we a secular country? But in this segment, we continue. The Manhattan Declaration, a group of Christians, Roman Catholic, Orthodox, Evangelical, Protestant, non-denominational, got together, issued a declaration, a joint declaration is what it was referred to as being, saying that we're not going to take it anymore. We're going to stand up for what's right, and it's about time the church did so loudly and proudly. I'm Roland Lettner.
And I'm Tom Baker.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Phone lines are open now. So, do you think, Tom, this is the result of too many years of Jesus meek and mild, Jesus of the soapy, warm hug, the almost feminine Jesus, where we're supposed to be quiet and demure, and when we disagree, we shouldn't speak up, we shouldn't get uppity as Christians?
You may have something there that God tends to put us in positions where we're now going to speak up because there's a lot of self-interest involved. For example, there's no doubt there's been a strong pro-life movement, and we're going to have one of the leaders of that, James Lamb, in a number of days from here, where regardless of what has happened, but what I think has really moved this to where it's at now is that people are now going to be having their own lifestyles changed. If you are a doctor and you refuse to do an abortion in the new health plan, you may be out of being a doctor. If a state would ever say that homosexuals can be married and you're a pastor of a congregation, you'll lose your tax status, exempt status, if you don't go ahead and do the marriage. So, unfortunately, it's taken some self-interest things where people are going to say, you know, it was fine, I don't care what they do in their bedroom, but now they're coming into your bedroom. That's basically what's happening. Understanding what I mean by that, they're going to now make a difference in your life. And I think that's really part of the reason here. I don't think this would have come out had President Obama not been elected. But because of his policies that are so strongly pro-abortion and also in these other areas where homosexuality is not a problem for him, although I do think he's still against homosexual marriage. I heard him once speak out against that, and I'm not sure where his position. But there are so many people now part of that administration that they're moving in a direction where Christians are really going to end up being fined or going to jail for speaking the truth.
Well, you're talking about they're coming into my bedroom. It's not just my bedroom. They're coming into my living room. They're coming into
right.
My television set. The American Music Awards the other night. Wow, what a rolling freak show of pornography that was.
Oh, really?
Oh, gracious. This fellow who came in second at American Idol, Adam Lambert, full-on man-on-man kiss during the program. You know, now he's openly homosexual and, you know, has no... I mean, he is, I hate to use the term, but he's evangelical in his message of being pro-homosexual. And he's there, and you know what? They promote it. You know, the media promotes it, the networks promote it, the directors, the producers promote it.
Is that the one where they were going to feature Michael Jackson too strongly? Or
yeah, now Taylor Swift, you know, seems sort of a...
Yeah, no, I wanted to see that because I do like Michael Jackson singing, really, but unfortunately I was busy doing something else.
Okay. Again, a different program for another day.
Yes.
Tom Baker and Michael Jackson, what do you think?
Well, he's got some great songs.
I can't wait to see you moonwalk.
No, don't have the shoes. Actually, don't have the feet.
Well, but let's look at this. Last night on the O'Reilly Factor. Now, again, I would be very gracious to use other network news programs and feature them. But no CNN, no MSNBC, no... you know, primary broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, no one had audio or video we could use. Only Fox News, was really covering the story. The first report we heard was with Brett Baer. This one is from last night's O'Reilly Factor. His guest is Ann Coulter, who's written a number of different books. I'll introduce that. But there's kind of two interesting points to look at here. Let's look at one, how they address this Manhattan Declaration. But then also let's look at the theology of Bill O'Reilly, which can be entertaining at times.
Impact segment tonight. As you know, the Obama administration is mostly liberal and the American media is ardently secular. Now, the combination means marriage, abortion, and other moral issues are undergoing change. That has angered some religious leaders, and they have issued a 4,700-word manifesto called the Manhattan Declaration, a call of Christian conscience. Document encourages religious Americans to fight back, and in some cases even break the law. Joining us now from Florida to analyze, Ann Coulter, whose book, Guilty, Liberal Victims and Their Assault on America, is now out in paperback. You know, your book and this manifesto have a lot in common, but we were surprised when the Archbishop of New York, Dolan, and other big religious leaders basically said, look, we got to become more aggressive here, we the people of faith, and we may even have to break the law. Were you surprised about that?
No, it's a fantastic statement. I didn't know about it until you sent it to me today. But, of course, anything written by Chuck Colson and Robert George will be fantastic. The civil disobedience parts of it are pretty narrow. It's for saying that we won't participate as doctors, nurses, hospitals in euthanasia, in abortion. Churches won't participate in same-sex marriage or in denouncing, condemning homosexuality in the practice of their faith. Most people aren't called on as Christians to give up their lives, to give up money, to suffer in prison. Certainly not in America. It's amazing that this document is even necessary, but it might wake up some of the Christian churches and Christian ministers and priests who have been silent as the culture gets more and more corrupt, and they're off talking about, if anything, you know, something fashionable like
the poor or AIDS in Africa. Excuse me. Tomorrow night our lead story is Bishop Tobin from Rhode Island, who has called out Congressman Kennedy and said you can't receive communion because you're such an advocate for abortion. He's going to be on a Factor in an exclusive tomorrow. So we're starting to see now a bubbling up of the Catholic Church and in combination with evangelical Protestants to say enough's enough. But I'm wondering what the tipping point was, because for years, you didn't hear any of this. The secular media ran wild without challenge. Now we have a liberal Obama administration that wants to institute a lot of very liberal policies on abortion, gay marriage, and et cetera. And now, are they too late? Is the religious community too late?
I hope not. But you're right about what is it that set it off now.
Right.
It really is like the proverbial frog in the boiling water. It has been so incremental, so constant. And some of these churches all along have been speaking out on the cultural crisis around us, but some have been absolutely mum about it. And it's shameful. I'd like to know which ministers and priests refuse to sign this statement. This is something Christians are sometimes correctly and sometimes incorrectly criticized for not being, not doing enough to stop the Holocaust, not doing enough to stop slavery. Totally false in the case of slavery. Individual Christians were magnificent in the Holocaust. The church was a little slow to recognize it.
The civil rights Germany,
movement,
the church,
heavily
in Germany, is, interestingly enough, the Vatican was slow. But in Germany, Catholics formed the main opposition to Adolf Hitler. And they were brutalized across the board. Now, there were some quislings that, that went along with it, but the Catholic Church in Germany, a story that really has been told, was ardently
and even
opposed.
More so in even more so in Poland, and of course,
so let me ask you this: here's what I think happened. Here's what I think happened.
At churches not doing this now, when Christopher Hitchens, the atheist, can condemn Christian churches for not speaking out more on the Bill Clinton treating an intern like an ashtray, and he's right about that, then there's something wrong with the churches.
Okay,
and they
but aren't the church.
And when people can be shocked.
Individual indiscretions have never really been the target, and I get into this with the bishop tomorrow as well, of religious leaders. But here's what I think tipped it, and I want to get your opinion. Here's what I think tipped it. I think it's the abortion option in the health care bill that is not going to go through, but so many Democrats want it to go through, which would force all Americans, even pro-life Americans, to fund through their taxpayer dollars abortions. I think that's what lit the fuse for Dolan here in New York and the others put out this manifesto. I'll give you the last word.
That may be part of it. I think you'd have to check with Robert George and Colson, but I do think it's a lot more than that. I mean, when the world is shocked at my single mother, mother's chapter. You could have asked the town imbecile what a single mother should do 30 years ago, and he'd say, have a shotgun marriage or give it up for adoption. When I present obvious facts about single motherhood, and that is a shocking stance to take, where are the churches on a crumbling moral culture in this society?
They don't like to do that.
About,
they don't like to do that.
Yeah, because they're cowards.
Well, I don't know about
this. You aren't talking about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of things in the Bible that say you don't make individual judgments. That's the deities. It's the he without sin cast the first stone and nobody throws the stone. There's a lot of that. Real quick, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sure the slave owners liked quoting that.
No, it comes critical
mass. It's time for the churches to stand up and react.
Right.
And it's, I think it's also gay marriage. It's not just abortion. It's the endless push for gay marriage.
All right, Ann. Thanks very much, as always.
Well, there you go, Tom. Ann Coulter says, since you've declared you won't sign this, you're a coward.
Well, I'm not going to sign it because I disagree with certain portions of it. I think they did really well when they're talking about, from a natural, reasonable point of view, if you allow certain things to take place, you're really going to have a problem. But let me just ask you, here's a statement they make. Do you believe that persons of faith should be forbidden to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience?
Well, that's being issued in a Christian context, right?
No, I just asked the question.
Okay. Well, I mean, if I want to practice voodoo rites and sacrifice chickens, I guess the Constitution protects that also.
The very fact that you were able to bring up situations that this doesn't fit shows me why I won't sign this, because I disagree with this statement that persons of faith should not be forbidden to worship God according to the dictates of the conscience. I do have some friends who are homosexuals who are involved with the hope of having marriage between homosexuals, and they believe that Jesus Christ is not forbidding this. And they say that I, therefore, would be forbidding them to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience. You see, that statement isn't found anywhere in the Bible. This now becomes a statement of reason that this particular declaration is attempting to use to bolster their position. But they have to understand, if it's good for the hen, it's also good for the rooster. If they're going to make a statement across the board like that, in fact, here's the whole statement. No one should be compelled to embrace any religion against his will. Well, we do that day in and day out. The Christian religion teaches that you should not murder. And we put a lot of people in jail because they're not embracing that Christian point of view. So this is really ridiculous, particularly if I'm a homosexual and I say, well, look, you're compelling me to embrace the Christian religion against my will. So statements like this, once you sign this, you're saying these things that are said here, this has become your confession. And I just don't agree with this notion that persons of faith should be forbidden to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience. Because imagine if you were a warden in prison and had to allow all the different religions to worship God. Remember some of them, some of the Indians, what is it, peyote or whatever is that drug that they want and things like that. No, the country has come down very strongly that no, you are not always permitted to worship God according to the dictates of your conscience because your conscience is corrupt.
Well, let's deal with one of the points that was made in
yes.
the piece, that churches have acted, and they speak generically, so we're broad brushing,
right?
Obviously, that the churches have been cowards, afraid like a bunny, hiding in its hole, to stick its little head up, and say something about these issues.
I do believe there are pastors, at least from the emails that we receive, a lot of times people are going to churches, and let's just take one example in California when the churches were really involved in striking down that proposition that would have allowed gay marriage. There were a number of pastors who would not say anything from the pulpit about it simply because they didn't want to cause a division in their church. So, yes, I think Ann Coulter is correct that in some situations they were cowards because they don't want division within their church and they look for unity as more important than proclaiming the Word of God in its purity.
She did make another interesting observation, which is she brought up this fellow we've talked about before, Christopher Hitchens.
The atheist.
And she said, isn't it a shame when these atheists are more critical of behavior in society and culture than the churches are? And they referenced, you know, Bill Clinton's indiscretions. And I do remember vividly people coming on news programs who were pastors of different denominations actually sort of defending, not really defending what he did, but sort of saying, oh, come on, get over it. It's the 20th century, after all.
Yes, there's no doubt that that happened. The best example I can think of in the Old Testament where unbelievers knew better than believers is David's sin with Bathsheba. Because one of the reasons that Nathan says the child is going to die is because God was humiliated before the other nations when his prime man, the king of Israel, King David, did what he did with Bathsheba. So those nations had a better sense of morality than did David and Israel at that time. And I'm sure there was nobody in Israel. Remember, they contributed to the death of Uriah, which was Bathsheba's husband, by doing a trick on him where he ended up running towards the wall all by himself and got killed by the arrows or whatever. So this is a great example that when you have a leader that is contrary to the will of God, it filters down throughout the nation, and they become cowards in standing up for the word of God because under some strange thing that we're supposed to obey the laws of the land.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go to Rick. Rick, you've got a comment about this.
Yeah, Pastor Baker, you just said something really interesting to me when you said that we shouldn't convert anyone against their will.
No, I didn't say convert. I said that we should not agree with this statement that persons of faith should not be forbidden to worship God according to the dictates of their conscience.
Oh, okay. Because I thought I heard you say the other one in an example, and I was thinking that if the law should be that we should not attempt to convert anyone against their will, that would eliminate baptism as a sacrament that the church could use.
Well, frankly, Rick, is not every person, when they're converted against their will, including there was this guy named Saul who became Paul. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. But I was,
and I'm sure it wasn't that he wasn't on the donkey thinking, "Boy, maybe I should believe in this Jesus." And then came the brilliant light. No, it was everything was against his will.
Well, now you can check my facts on this, but there's a very active, robust de-baptism movement going on in Great Britain right now. It's very popular. Where there's an organization that will actually issue you a certificate of de-baptism because people are growing up feeling this was done to them against their will. So Rick is not far off the mark here when he talks about this.
Right.
But I was just thinking that if that should be, you know, part of the law at some point, that in terms of governing, you know, Christian behavior, at first it sounds very meat, right, and salutary to say that no one should be converted against their will, but then that could be used to tell the church that you can't baptize your infant children.
Well, in Saudi Arabia they use it that you can't even speak the words Jesus and attempt to convert someone.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my first reaction to that statement. You used a different example, but that was the one that my mind immediately jumped to was the, you know, a prohibition of being able to administer the sacrament.
Well, would you sign this declaration as much as you know of it right now?
From the very first moment that you kind of read those words, it was like, a document like that would be something that I would like to be able to put my name on it.
Yes, me too.
But I can't, not in good conscience. The line out of the movie, A Man for All Seasons, he says, you know, it might actually be possible to sign the document. What does it say? Because the words are important.
Yes.
And, of course, the words were written in that particular document, such as these are, that it's impossible.
Yes. If I had been advised or been an advisor, I would have cut it down to one page, stuck with the three issues, and say, we are willing to go to jail rather. Now this was important because I think O'Reilly, he said, these people are saying they're willing to break the law, No, they're not. There is no law right now they're willing to break because there is no law in the books they have to break.
Right.
They're looking at the laws that are coming into place under this present administration where they're going to have to break the law. And I think that's, and I really agree with O'Reilly that the abortion necessity of paying for it and having to do it if you're a doctor.
Right.
That's really what has led to this particular declaration.
Yeah, it's neither safe nor right to act against conscience. I believe somebody famous said that once. So.
Sounds like a good quote.
How'd that go again? I'm going to write that down.
What, that it's neither safe nor right to act against conscience?
Right.
Here I stand. God help me.
Boy, Rick, you're a smart guy. I'm going to send that to me in an email.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Rick.
Put it on Facebook. We'll see you later.
All right. Thank you.
Well, Rick makes some good points.
Oh, yes.
You know, the other thing that caught my attention is that, I don't remember if it was O'Reilly or Coulter, one of the two of them said they hoped this document had not arrived too late.
That was O'Reilly's question to Coulter, and she said, I hope so also, something along that line.
Well, what do you think? Has it arrived too late? Have we been asleep at the switch for too long? We're now, since 1973 to collectively rise up and do away with this demon of abortion. And we've tried, and we've done our best, and there have been many valiant Christians who have stood up in opposition to it, but it's become sort of a benign thing. It happens, it doesn't affect my life, so why should I worry about it? And, you know, maybe the toothpaste once out of the tube cannot be put back in.
Here we're dealing with a Christian church, and it's never too late. Well, we've had, even in this country, times when things have switched back. They call them the Great Awakenings. Well, it's quite possible that can happen in the United States of America. But as we had done a former show, remember they were talking about how Christianity center changes, where the vast majority of Christians are?
Oh, yes.
And they're now down in South America and Africa, and they're moving away from the United States. Pretty soon they'll be sending missionaries to us.
Yeah, the Holy Spirit has itchy feet, doesn't he?
Well, he blows where he wants to blow, and, you know, we don't know which way he's going to be going. So from that point of view, it's never too late, because we have seen huge... Somebody would have said, let's take the... what was that denomination? The Worldwide Church of God. I mean, that was a cult from our point of view, and... Taking a look at that, everybody would have said, well, it's too late because these are... And now, what, 90% of the pastors have converted to Christianity. It's a huge miracle that God did there. So it's never too late if you're talking about a denomination or if you're talking about your children or your spouse or your relatives or even your parents. It's never too late to start today.
Speaking of groups out of the mainstream, as I was researching this and trying to find the audio... I mentioned earlier that I had no luck finding anything on CNN, MSNBC, those sort of places.
Yes.
I did find one reference on CNN. They put up a video of a Mormon fellow talking about, well, it's about time we did this 15 years ago.
Yes, Mormons are well known for standing up for morality. Of course, they didn't put out a statement, as far as I know, that they're willing to break the law. Because, as you know, they're somewhat polygamous, and they're trying to tell us that they are not doing that, even though there's some evidence that occasionally that does happen.
Yeah. His point was, if you Christians would spend less time hating Mormons and more time focusing on the important things, you would have joined us 15 years ago. I thought that was interesting as the only other bit of audio out there other than Fox News.
Yeah, joining us in saying that Christianity is basically morality... We need to see that this group is saying that the laws of God, if they are misused, will cause great damage to this country. And that, I think, is a great point.
Phone lines are open now. Call us. We have a few minutes after this break.
KFUO Radio and the National Lutheran Choir have a Christmas treat for you. Listen for the jingle bells. That'll be your cue to call and register for a package that includes a National Lutheran Choir CD, $50 certificate for Squire's Restaurant, and 4 tickets for the National Lutheran Choir Christmas Concert on the evening of December 19th at Christ Church Cathedral. We'll draw the winner Thursday, December 17th. So listen for the bells and register as often as you like on KFUO Radio.
In Revelation chapter 3, verse 8, Jesus speaks to the church in Philadelphia and says, "Behold, I have set before you an open door which no one is able to shut." Let's ask Pastor Mark Hawkinson what is the meaning of that verse and the rest of the text as it pertains to the church in Philadelphia. It comes up next time on our live Bible study program.
Underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
The Sun, a paradox for evolution.
Answers with Ken Ham, co-author of the book, How to Raise Godly Children in an Ungodly World.
The Sun seems perfect for life on Earth, yet it's a paradox for evolutionists. In theory, as the Sun's nuclear fuel burns up, the Sun's core should also shrink. Now, this makes nuclear reactions occur more rapidly. And what would that do? Well, the Sun would become brighter. But this means that if the universe were billions of years old, the Sun would have been much fainter in the past. But you know, there's absolutely no evidence that the Sun was fainter at any time in the Earth's history. Astronomers actually call this the faint young Sun paradox. But it's no paradox at all if the Sun is only as old as the Bible says, about 6,000 years. Evolutionists believe that life first appeared on Earth about 3.8 billion years ago. But if that timescale were true, the Sun would be 25% brighter today than it was back then. This suggests that the Earth would have been frozen 3.8 billion years ago, and life would have not been possible. You know, nothing in observational science has ever contradicted the Bible's account of creation. The Earth is young.
But didn't Darwin show that the Earth is old and that life evolved? We tackle those questions in a brand new pocket guide on the life of Darwin. It's yours for a donation of any size today. Call us 24 hours a day, toll free, at 1-888-89-ANSWERS or on the web at answersoffer.org.
On Wednesday's Morning Essentials, we'll get some timely turkey tips from registered dietitian Connie Dickman. We'll talk about bioethics issues with Dr. Bob Weiss from Concordia Seminary. We'll give you a chance to win the Star of Bethlehem DVD. We'll be ringing those jingle bells and registering you for free tickets to see the National Lutheran Choir. Plus, essential information to start your Wednesday, because we are where you are in the morning on KFUO Radio.
A pastor who doesn't care whether or not you go to church? What was Pastor John Lukomsky thinking? Well, here's what he said recently on our Bible study program.
One thing you find out when you're a pastor right away is some church members don't come to church. And for the longest time, I listened to the things that I got in the mail, and I was given the impression that, well, you know, this is a problem. People need to come to church. And they had all kinds of programs and plans to try to get people to come to church more frequently. And somewhere along the line, I began to realize, no, that's actually not the problem at all. Frankly, I don't care whether people come to church at all. Church can be a pretty dull and boring place, and you're thinking, what? You don't care whether people come to church? Well, what I mean by that is, no, what I care about is people believing and having faith. It's not that you didn't go to church or that you slept in. That's a minor deal, really. The problem is what's happening with your whole faith?
What's the condition of your faith? We can help keep it healthy. The Bible Study, weekday mornings at 10:05. Welcome back to Law and Gospel. I have a few moments left to continue our discussion about the Manhattan Declaration. Chuck Colson, I understand, is one of the primary authors of that. Tomorrow on Law and Gospel, Pastor Peter Kurowski joins us. We're going to take a look at Thanksgiving. It's a day for giving thanks. Who are you thanking? Are you thanking Mom and Dad for cooking the turkey? Or are you thanking God for the great blessings and benefits He's given us? And how do you celebrate a Christian Thanksgiving in a secular country? Or should we be asking, is it even a secular country? Peter Kurowski is very good on these subjects, and you'll want to tune in tomorrow and hear what he has to say about that. Now,
with this Manhattan Deck. Oh, I'm Roland Lettner, by the way.
I'm Tom Baker.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Your calls, plenty of time. Welcome. So how do we, as Christians, exist in a world where telling someone that something is wrong is considered more wrong than the wrong we're telling them not to do?
Run that by me again.
Two wrongs never make a right.
Right.
But three rights will always make a left.
Boy.
Okay. No, it is a greater crime today to tell someone that something is wrong than the wrong they are doing.
I'm still lost a little bit. I mean, give me an example of
okay.
telling your child.
If I'm going to tell my... Well, let's deal with an adult child. If I go to my adult child and say, son, you should not have a boyfriend. This goes against God's will.
Right.
His homosexual behavior is not as great a wrong as my pointing it out to him.
From his point of view.
Because I'm being intolerant.
Yes, yes.
So Christians are supposed to be pointing these things out. Isn't that what this declaration is supposed to be?
Yes, and they're pointing them out because of our love for the people who are involved in it, just like slavery. When the Christians strongly opposed slavery, it wasn't just out of love for the slaves, it was also out of love for the slave owners. Because...
What?
Well, the way that... What is true love? True love is doing the will of God. It's not a kind of emotional thing.
It's not two people in slow motion running towards each other in a field of daisies?
No. It could be a child being sent up to bed... as a punishment. That's an act of love by the parent if the child has done something wrong. Love is kind of interesting. When I go out and do seminars, I'll ask people, can anybody think of a time that Jesus didn't show love? And they always, if they come up with one, it's always one incident. The whip in the temple. That's the only one they ever mention.
I would think it was when he said to Peter, get thee behind me, Satan.
Well, they kind of understand there that Peter needed to be woken up.
Ah, okay.
But the whip in the temple, boy, especially in this day and age where in some parts of the United States, if you actually hit a child, you can be arrested, even if it's your own son or daughter. So the whip in the temple, and it gives a great opportunity. What an act of love. He didn't go and take the whip into the temple because he didn't love the people who were trying to sell their way into heaven. He was trying to make them aware of their stance. And who knows whether Joseph of Arimathea or maybe Nicodemus had seen that. In fact, this Manhattan Declaration is so critical that if somebody would like a free copy of it, and I'll be glad to send anybody that by email. You need to send me an email of that. It's lawgospel@lawgospel.com. And it's 8 pages long, and if you're listening, you really need to read this in the context. We simply haven't had enough time here to deal with all the parts. But the goal, while you're reading this, is quite simple, is for you now also to realize the importance of taking a stand on God's Word in a way that is loving and benevolent. And I think this does a very good job of doing that.
You know what else is loving and benevolent? Going to the phone line. Susan, you're up with Pastor Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a nephew coming into town for Thanksgiving, and I'm catching all kinds of flack because I won't let him and his girlfriend sleep together.
We talked about that in the earlier hours.
Uh-huh. And I'm being accused of trying to push off my faith and my beliefs on them. They're not Christians, so why should they have to abide by Christians' rules and beliefs?
The answer you should give to that? You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. What gives them the right to push off their views on you?
Yes.
I mean, the argument works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows how foolish the argument is. It really doesn't have. The fact is, I'm assuming that this is your house.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yes. No. You have the right to have anything done in your house appropriately. And this house, you know what I used to do later in my ministry? When people moved to a house, we would go and bless it and turn it over to the glory of God. And all you need to say is, you know, this is a Christian home, and therefore where it can be helped, because there's a lot of sin that goes on it. I lose my temper, I have bad thoughts, but where it can be helped, we are not going to give an affront to God in this way.
Well, I will tell you that I've been reluctant to tell them that what they're doing is sin. I haven't really used the word sin. I just said, you know, that that goes against our beliefs, and we have a young teenager, and I don't. This just goes against what we're trying to teach him and what we believe is right. So I've honestly not come out with the sin word. That's the S word.
Yes, but you can just say, you know, you don't have a right to impose your religious practices under my roof.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to go to a motel or something, you know?
And that's really what they're it's almost like a threat. They're going to go to a motel, and it's almost supposed to be a threat. But it's my house, and this is the way we live, and so pretty much I'm done talking about it. But it's funny that it doesn't matter to anybody else that this is my house. I'm getting the flack for it, and I just think it's kind of odd.
Who's giving you the flack?
The other family members that some of them are even Christian, but other family members that definitely are not Christians. I have some that are atheists, some that are agnostic, and you know, they just kind of live their own lives and think everybody should be able to do whatever they want.
You know, I tell you, this is my bad part, but boy, I'd love to give the prayer at that Thanksgiving meal.
And there will be one.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. You know what I would do? How close are you to this individual who's bringing...
Well, I'm close enough. I'm the baby of the family. They're all older, and there's about 16 years between me and the oldest. But I think we're close. We're all very opinionated, and we certainly don't hesitate to share. But
how far do you live from him, or is he coming in from out of town?
Oh, out of town.
I would give him a phone call and just say, you know, how much you really love him. You're concerned about some things, but you know, this is something else. But at this point, this is a real affront to you to do this, and you would ask him out of love for you that you want to have him put you in that position and see how he would respond.
I can do that.
Yes.
I can do that.
And in that, you're going to give a faithful witness. You're telling him you're doing this because out of love, and you really don't want this situation to blow up, you know, for Thanksgiving. And let the Holy Spirit take it from there. I've often found that going directly to a person and telling them what an affront it is to you, and even if you disagree with me, would you really do that to somebody else who felt it was an affront? Like if I was Jewish and you were bringing nothing but pork, you know?
Yeah.
I'm only too happy to talk with you later on about why I feel the way I do, but at this point, I'm asking you to show the love towards me that I have towards you and not cause a huge thing to go on here.
Yeah, no, I will definitely do that. That's a good point. So, thank you.
God bless, Susan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. Good call.
I think there's going to be some tough Thanksgiving meals going around simply because of the policies of the new government in position here that I don't see how you're going to keep politics and religion out of it.
Well, yeah, I think people struggle to do that. But Susan's call is a good one because you can talk about these things in theory and we talk about analogies. She's living it. And it is tough. When you live it, it is tough.
Right.
Very tough. But I'm glad you're here to help us get through this.
You go on the offense, just like Jesus did. And when he said those words to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan," remember, Peter ended up writing not only in the Bible, but he became one of the great apostles.
That's Long Gospel for today. Thanks for being with us. Tomorrow, 4 o'clock, Peter Kurowski.
Tom Baker, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker and Roland Lettner, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.